Okay, so let's get started. We are holding on Tzedek Tet on the days by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Shnei Shulchanis Hayu Ba'ulam Nebifnim HaPasach HaBayis, we learned this, part of this, Anamar Aleph. There were two tables in the Ulam, in the entryway of the Heichel, on the inside of it, by the doors of the Heichel, meaning outside the doors of the Heichel, but inside the Ulam. Echad Shal Shayish Ve'echad Shal Zahav. One made out of marble, one made out of gold. We learned yesterday that one of them was made out of silver. So Rashi said that it was the same thing. It was whitish, so therefore it really was marble, but it resembled silver. Tosfos says here that it may be a machlokes between the Mishnah and the Braisa. Anyway, Al Shoshayish Noitzim and Lachma Ponim with Nisafzai, they put on the marble one, they put the Lachma Ponim when they first brought it in, so they would put it on that table for a bit, as Rashi says, I want to rest a bit, and also in order to symbolically show Myron Makodesh Limiting, because they're putting it on the marble, and afterwards they're going to be putting it on the gold. And then they would put it on the gold one when they're taking it out until they burn the contents of the position on the Mizeah, and only then can they distribute it among the Kohenim. And the reason why the last one has to be gold, because as we learned on Amar Aleph, you only go up in Kedusha, you don't go down. So therefore, they can't be going from gold to a lesser material. Okay.
With the assumption that gold is more precious metal.
It's more precious metal, so therefore you can't have that it was on gold and now you're going to downgrade the lachem aponim and put it on something cheaper. The tables also, when we say a marble table, when we say a gold table, we don't necessarily mean that they were solid marble and solid gold. The pashtus is the same thing. The pashtus, they ran out of wood and plated with marble. We learned the other day, right? We had a case and a table over there that was coated with marble. You put a layer of marble on top of it and you nail it on, or otherwise fasten it. What about the feet? So the feet aren't marble on it. And then there was the one gold table inside the Heichel, so all of Lachem Aponim Chamed, which is the one Lachem Aponim was on it constantly. What we usually think of as the Shulchan. And we learned before that there were 10 extra shulchanes in the first Beis Hamikdash that Shlomo made, but we have the different opinions about whether Lachem Aponim was actually ever placed on them. Okay. Now, when it comes time to replace the Lachem Aponim, how do they do it? Four Kohenim come in to swap out the Lachem Aponim. Shnayim biyadim shnei sedarim. Two of them are holding the two stacks of Lachem Aponim. Each one is holding one stack of six. Why wouldn't he? He's holding it like this. He's holding it as one. Yeah, one on top of the other. They were somewhat heavy. I mean, factually, one of the Achronim points out the reason why you couldn't have one Kohen carry all 12 is because then it would be more than the average person could carry. As Gemara talks about elsewhere, if the average person can carry 30 Kavim, he was saying each Kavim was 2 Achronim for a total of 24 Achronim, that would be much more. That would be, according to the charts that we had at the beginning of a previous credit when we were comparing Kavim to Achronim. What did we say over there? We said that 30 cav equaled 20 Esronim. So 20 Esronim, and here you have 20. Two Esronim each, so it would be 24. Yeah, so you're not going to have one person carry all of them. 30 cabins, as Mark mentioned, in both of them. It's not to say that people can't carry more than that, but that's the average that a person can be expected to carry. Okay, anyway. The point is, so therefore, you have one person carrying six and the other person carrying six. Well, Shnayim be other Shnei Bozichin, and you have two others who are carrying the two Bozichin, that are the new ones that are going to be placed on the back. And there, by the way, I mean, you can't just have the position. The new position that contained Laboina that's going to be put on with the new Lachem Aponim. Now, those are much lighter, of course. You could conceivably have one person carry both. The reason why not is because it's an Avoida, and Avoida has to be done with the right hand. So there, you can't have the one person hold two position in his right hand, therefore you need two people. But Avon Makdimin Lefne, and then you have four other Kohenim go in ahead of those four. Shnayim Lithol Shnei Sedarim, two Kohenim are going in to take out the two stacks of old Lachem Aponim that were put there last week, or Shnayim Lithol Shnei Bozichin, and two others to take the two Bozichin. Again, they have to hold it in their right hand. Same idea. Hamachnisim Omdim Asafin Upneim Ladorim. The ones who are putting in the new Lachem Aponim stand on the northern side of the Shulchan, meaning between the Shulchan and the wall, Upneim Ladorim, and they're facing south. Now, this Mishnah obviously goes according to the opinion of Rebbe that we learned the other day, that the long axis of the Shulchan was was from east to west, and therefore, in other words, that the long sides of it, one was to the north and one was to the south. According to the laws of Reb Shimon, you would have to say differently. Yeah. Anyway, so the ones who are putting in the new lachem aponim stand on the north and face towards the south. Why is that?
They're walking between south.
No, so in other words, they're walking in from the eastern side of the Hegel, because that's facing towards the west, because that's the way you go in. But then when they reach the Shulchan, they turn 90 degrees, their backs are to the wall, and their faces are towards the Shulchan. The people who are taking out the old lachem aponim is the other way around. They stand on the south side, facing towards the north. So the two, they're facing each other. They're facing each other across the shulchan. The reason why the ones who are putting this in the new lachem aponim stand on the north, Rashi explains, because outside in the Azara, we find that the kedusha of the Safan is greater, because that's where Kodesh Kodeshim are shrouded on the north side. Therefore, symbolically also, now we have the ones who are putting in the new lachem aponim, which is, like, so to speak, more of an avodah than the other one, who are taking out the old ones to be distributed among the kohanim, so therefore they stand on the north.
So you want those
from the south towards the north, and the old ones are being, the new ones are going from the north towards the south, so the people are standing in the north, facing south, and the people who are taking out the old ones, is the other way around. You have a similar thing at the end of Sukkah, it talks about that when the Mishmaros are dividing up the lachem aponim, on Shabbos, you have the outgoing Mishmar and the incoming Mishmar, that the outgoing Mishmar divides up, the incoming Mishmar divides up the lachem aponim on the north side of the Azara and the outgoing one on the south side, same idea. So the northern side has greater kedusha because Kodesh HaKodeshim are shechted. Okay. So now you have, one group is pulling out the old lachem aponim, and the next ones are simultaneously putting it in. The tipchei sholzeh connected tipchei sholzeh. The tefach, meaning the hand of one group of kohanim, is right next to the hand of the other. In other words, as they move out the old lachem aponim by a tefach, the other ones move in the new lachem aponim by the same tefach. So the shulchan always has lachem on it, shenem alafonai tomid. As the pasuk says, the bread has to be on the shulchan in front of me constantly. And therefore, that means constantly, so you can't take off the old one and only then put on the new one.
So you have, in other words, as close as possible.
I mean, not necessarily are they completely synchronized, but the basic idea is that as the old one is going out, the new one is going in. Mephoshim talk about the idea that since I mentioned the other day, the idea that the Shulchan represents that through that bracha comes to the Jewish people in their gashmiyos, in their rainfall and their crops and whatever. And I think that Rabban talks about this. You have similar to the idea with the Tach HaShemen of the widow over there who comes to Elisha, and Elisha tells her, what do you have left in the house? And you ask her, what do you have left in the house? Well, she has one jug of oil, and from that comes a nest, that there comes more and more oil out of that. The point is, a bracha of Hashem has to rest on something. So therefore, there always has to be lachem aponim on the shulchan. That way, the bracha can rest on that. From that, it can
rest on today.
Good question. I mean, we said the other day that putting shulchan is mechaper for them. So to that extent, there's that. But you're right. We don't have the same thing. That's one of the things we're missing. All right. Rabbi Yossi says that's not necessary to have it exactly as you're pulling out one, you're pushing in the other. I feel even Muslims are even on this thing. Even if you had one group taking off the lachem aponim and only later on the other group putting it on, that would also be considered chomid, because he's saying that chomid doesn't necessarily have to mean constantly 24/7. It can mean, I mean, for example, the korban chomid is brought twice a day. It's not being brought 24 hours a day. It's the same thing. Okay. Okay, so the two kohanim who are carrying the old lachem aponim, they take it and they bring it out and they put it on the golden table that was in the olam. Again, for my kodesh olam meridin, he's putting it on the golden table. They go and take the bazichin and take the levonia that's in them and burn it on the mizbeach. And the 12 chalas get divided up among the kohanim. The Gemara at the end of Sukkah, the Mishnah, and the Gemara there at the end of Sukkah discusses the exact disposition of it. We have one, the Tanakhama over there says that the outgoing Mishmar gets 6 and the incoming Mishmar gets 6, or the order says it's 7 and 5, because the incoming Mishmar is going to be closing the door, the gate for the Azara that the outgoing Mishmar opened that morning, so therefore it's like an extra thing they're doing, and therefore we give them 2 extra chalas for it. There's other times the Mishnah mentions over there, depending when it's before or after Yom Tov, you have different ways that the chalos are divided. And also you have, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, I think in Yuma, it talks about that the Kohen Gadol was entitled to half of them. So if we say, let's say, according to the Tanakhama, So in other words, if we go like the Tanakama and Sukha, that the incoming one gets six and the outgoing one gets six, it means that each of them gives three of those chalas to the Kohen Gadol, and he can do whatever he wants with them. I guess he could eat them, he could give them back to the Kohen and to distribute among themselves, he could whatever. Yeah, but they have to give it to him as covered, and then
what
he
can't do it with.
Again, there was he going to, he could eat them all. He could share them among them. I mean, it's kodja, kodja, it's only eaten in the Azara. So it's not like he can bring them home. But yeah, he could. I guess if he's a particularly hungry Kohen Gadol, and you have a Gemara in Pesachim, for example, that mentions the Kohen Gadol Yosef and Ben Narboi, who was a big eater, so maybe he could actually eat all six of them. But if not, the Samah, he would give them the hungry. And the Samah, what he could do is he could distribute them back to the people, give them back to the Kohenim, maybe he could give it to his friends among the Kohenim, whatever. Anyway, all right. Continues the mission. How you have a kapurim liyas for Shabbos? Supposing sipper comes out on Shabbos, you can't eat the lachem afanim that day. Hachalos mischalchus la'erev. So instead, you divide up hachalos with the lachem afanim. That means must Shabbos. Well, must yom kippur. Well, yeah, it would be must Shabbos. It's talking about yom kippur comes out on Shabbos. How liyas the erev Shabbos? How about another case? What if yom kippur comes out on erev Shabbos? Now nowadays we can't have that. Our fixed calendar has that yom kippur can never be on erev Shabbos. But in those days, when they were Makadosh Afir, it was possible. In general, they would try to avoid it. The Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah that in general, they would try to avoid it because of the issue of Yauki or Mesia. If you have vegetables that are going to wilt over 2 days of Yom Kippur and Shabbos adjacent to each other because you can't cook them, like on Yom Tov, dead bodies unburied are going to spoil. So in general, the Sanhedrin would try to avoid it. Yeah, you don't have a choice. If a person dies right before Yom Kippur, or right, let's say a person dies during Kol Nidre, or whatever, they can't bury him on Yom Kippur, you can't bury him on Shabbos. But today, if they put him in a morgue, okay, it's refrigerated, fine, but in those days, it didn't happen. So therefore, so for those kinds of things, then that the Gemara talks about in Rosh Hashanah in general, they would try to avoid it. But there could always be where they weren't able to avoid it, and so it happened. Okay. So now it's not a problem with the Lachem HaFanim, because the Lachem HaFanim is not taken off the Shulchan on Erev Shabbos. But it's a different issue. The issue is, you have a third Shel Yom HaKippurim. You have, among all the Korbanos that are brought on Yom Kippur, most of them are burnt complete, or either burnt completely on the Mizeah, or they're burnt outside the Matzah. But you have, there's a goat that's brought of a chatzot, not the special one where the blood of it is brought into the hechel, but a regular goat for a chatzot, like you have on every other Yom Tov, series in Echav HaChatzot. And that one has to be eaten by the Kohen. So usually, if Yom Kippur was on, so the problem is like, if Yom Kippur is on any other day of the week, no problem. You can't eat it on Yom Kippur itself, obviously, but you can still eat it at the chatzot, it can be eaten that night. So fine, they cook it, must be Yom Kippur, and they eat it during that night. If Yom Kippur is on Friday night, if Yom Kippur is on Friday, rather, you have a problem. Yom Kippur is going into Shabbos. You can't cook it and eat it on Yom Kippur. You can't cook it and eat it Friday night. And if you wait till Shabbos morning, it's going to be nice. No, if you're going to wait till Motzei Shabbos, it's going to be nice. Yeah. So what do you do? Nechol la'erev. So, okay. So in a normal case, nechol la'erev. So, okay. Chalit be'er Shabbos. Third Shabbos. Yom Kippur, nechol la'erev. The third of Yom Kippur is supposed to be eaten that evening, Friday night. Now, they can't cook it on Shabbos, but nevertheless, it's supposed to be eaten. So how do we do it? The Bavliim open Shulchai, the Bavliim Kohenim from Babel would eat it raw if they should Daita and Yoffa because they're not fastidious. Most of them, of course, understand Daita and Yoffa as being like a euphemism, meaning they have a weird kind of bath, a weird kind of sensibility, so whatever, and therefore they don't mind eating meat raw. But anyway, we'll see in the Gemara who exactly these Bavliim were, but yeah. So actually, there's an interesting point. There are some interesting points about that. First of all, based on what Tosfos says on the next Amud, Tosfos doesn't say explicitly in so many words, but based on what they say, it seems that they're not actually being the mitzvah of eating kodshim that way. Because kodshim, you have to eat it in the normal way, and eating raw meat is not considered a normal way of eating. However, what they're accomplishing with it is at least that it won't become noser. So at least they're accomplishing that. As far as the actual halachas, now, you are, okay, so in principle, you're allowed to eat meat raw as long as you do something, so what do you do as far as the blood? So you have machlokas you're showing him on that. Is it that you're allowed to eat it even though the blood is in it, because it's only dame varim, and that's only ofte midrabanan, and maybe in this case, only dame nefesh came out when he shechted it, or according to the Rambam, no, it would mean you tacked out the solstice. So according to the Rambam, I guess they would have had the solstice. Well, so normally not, because it would be also midrabanan, but okay, maybe these guys would, in order to be able to eat it, so it shouldn't become nicer, then they would go ahead and solve it. Okay. Fine. The Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a Braita that this... No, we're not in Babel, it's not actually in Eretz Yisrael. Babli means people from Babel. Koyanim, who came from Babel. We'll see in the Gemara that these are not all Babli, and we'll see, we'll talk about them later. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Tanya, Rabbi Yossi. Right now, this that we said in the Mishnah. So again, we have the Chachamim saying in the Mishnah, the Tanakama saying in the Mishnah that as one group of Kohanim is taking out the old Lachan Aponim, the next one's actually putting it in right next to them. So the Shulchan is not without Lachan Aponim for even a moment. And we said Rabbi Yossi disagrees and says it doesn't matter even if they did, the old ones they took off and later on they put on a new one that would still be considered Talmud. So Tanya, the learner of Raisa. Rabbi Yossi, I'm actually similar to Farishon HaShachris, even if they took off the old Lachan Aponim on in the morning, the Siddur is the Chadosh Arvis, and then they put the new ones on Arvis. Now, Arvis doesn't mean by night, because you can't put them on by night. It means in the afternoon. Ein b'kach klum, there's no problem with it. El amani, disagree, obviously, but he says, El amani m'kayim l'fonai tomid. So what do I do with the positive? That there has to be lechem ponim l'fonai tomid. It means, shalo yolim shulchan b'lai lechem. It means the shulchan cannot be overnight without lechem ponim on it. But as long as sometime during the day, you put lechem ponim on it, then you're good. Based on what Rabbi Yossi is saying, based on Rabbi Yossi's definition of Talmud, we can learn from that a whole different deal. As far as Hilchos Talmud Torah, even if a person only learns Torah, one parak in the morning and one parak in the evening, then he's Makai in the mitzvah that it says at the beginning of Sefer Yeshua, this book of the Torah should not leave your mouth, because then it continues over there, that should be Vahagisa Vahyoyim Vahalayla. Since we see that Rabbi Yossi defines Tomid as being as long as sometime during the day, then you're doing it. So by the same logic then, if there's a Pasuk saying Vahagisa Vahyoyim Vahalayla, so according to Rabbi Yossi, it would cut out therefore that the person only learns Parakachat Shachos or Parakachat Arvis, then he's Yossi that. He's considered Tomid.
No more than 24 hours.
Well, in other words, by day and by night, right? That's what we're saying. By day and by night. Perakach shachos, perakach adam. There's, by the way, there's an explanation about it. Siddur's the deeper idea of the expression. Perakach ad perak is also Meloshin pulling apart, like mafarkin evar of shalotim or whatever. So it means this perakach shachos is not just you're learning superficially. It has to be the kind of learning that takes you apart, that takes you apart, and then you get, not necessarily, the point isn't that so much shachos higher. The point is that you learn it with a realization of who's the nurse and atherda that takes you apart and then puts you back together in a better way, basically. Okay. So, and by the way, I mean, Mephoshim points out, it's not even, well, I mean, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi as far as the lachan aponim. However, the Rambam does accept this statement as halacha. So how does it work if it doesn't work by the lachan aponim? The difference is that the lachan aponim doesn't say the word yomim v'layla. But the lachan aponim just says tomi. Therefore, the chachamim say, well, that means always. Whereas by limud atzorah, this passage from Yeshua that we're quoting, lo yomush sefer atzorah zem pisha v'hagisa by yomim v'layla, it says yomim v'layla. So therefore, for that purpose, we can accept Rabbi Yossi's definition of Tomid, because the Pasuk itself is modifying it with Yom HaBalayim. Om Rabbi Yechanan Lashum Rabbi Shimon Ben Yechai, and furthermore, Rabbi Yechanan says, in the name of Rabbi Shimon Ben Yechai, even more than that, Afilu like Kara Adam, Al Kriyash Mashachas Ta'aris, Kiyom Lo Yomush. Even if a person only says Shema in the morning and in the evening, then already with that he's Mekayim that the Torah shouldn't leave your mouth. In other words, he's fulfilled his minimum obligation of Torah with that, just by saying Kriyash Shema in the morning and in the evening. However, he continues, the double that also the Omer Gisnei Amei Oret. You're not allowed to say such a thing before Amei Oret, because what's going to happen if you say it in front of Amei Oret? They're going to think, well, then why should we have to bother learning Torah? All we have to do is say Shema in the morning and the evening, and they're never going to learn. They're never going to learn anything. So therefore, don't tell them that. The Rav Amar Mitzvah L'Omer Gisnei Amei Oret. Rav says, on the contrary, it's a mitzvah to tell such a thing to Amei Oret. Now, why should that be? So Rashi explains two reasons. Number one, the Amei Oret is going to think like this. Look at that. The Chachamim are telling you that just for saying Shema, you get such a tremendous reward that it continues, and that process continues. It says, Hashem says to Yeshua, Lo yomush sefer haTorah zem pisha, this book of the Torah should not leave your mouth. Valgisa v'yom v'layla, you should be meditating in it day and night, and put l'man tishmer l'asas kolach v'asabay, in order that you should guard to do everything that it says in it. And the process finishes off, Ki oz hasliach hasyach hachata oz haskir. Then you'll be successful in your ways, and then you'll be wise. So the Amar Oris should realize to himself, look at this, the Chachamim are telling me that you get such a tremendous power just for saying Kriyash Mashachas V'Aris, how much more so if I were to spend more time learning, I'll get an even greater reward.
I don't know. Yeah.
No, that's the point. That's the point. In other words, Rava is saying, if you inform them that a person is only saying Shachas, Shema, Shachas V'Aris, and already he gets this power, then the Amar Oris is likely to say, you know what, then Taka, I should get more into it. That's one explanation. The second explanation Rashi says is, Now, my audience is going to think like this. Look at this. The Chachamim know of this fact that a person can be Yotzeh with just saying Krishna. Nevertheless, they don't talk to themselves with that. They sit and learn the whole day. Obviously, there must be tremendous power involved in it. So therefore, again, it's the idea that it'll impel them to realize there's much more to it. There's much more to it than this. We shouldn't be bemoaning it. We shouldn't be satisfied with just, yeah.
One thing, aren't you supposed to learn it Yishmarashem Shemayim without necessarily opposed?
Okay, but it's a start. A person eventually needs to reach the level where they're doing it L'shem Shemayim. That's true. But nevertheless, at least the person has to start someplace.
So it's a start.
So that's the point. Tell it to the artist, and that way at least it'll get. And Marshall says a third possibility also that what it means is that, like this, an Amal artist may not be particularly careful with Krishna. You tell him this verse about Krishna, Shachas Ma'avis, at least it'll make him careful with the mitzvah of Krishna. And then that way, at least you'll learn how to say that he's doing one more mitzvah, that he's doing one mitzvah for
them. What do you say about the prophet of Jesus, Bar-Yam and Valaya?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about, the Apostle Bar-Yam.
The Yishisha Bar-Yam and Valaya.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It says the Yishisha Bar-Yam and Valaya.
Yeah, Vahagisa
Bar-Yam. It doesn't mean one prophet.
Yeah. So he's it. No. Yeah. Like this, he's saying Shema, so therefore it is Divrei Torah. Shema is Divrei Torah. Okay, you have posts we'll talk about that maybe there's a difference whether he's saying Shema having in mind that he's also Yotze learning with it versus where he's saying it as part of davening. Okay, the interesting question is a lot of Achronim ask the question that here you have Rav Shimon ben Yochai saying that a person can be Yotze learning Torah with Shema Shachos Avos. Rav Shimon ben Yochai is the same one who says we have the famous thing that he was Torah Seir Masai, that he
yeah,
said
right.
he sees people plowing and planting Torah Masahei Olah. He's the one who says in Brachos that unlike Rav Shmuel, says Hanig and Minach Derech Eretz, that you have to plant in the proper season and plow in the proper season and so forth, and then make time for learning. Rav Shimon ben Yochai says if you do that Torah Masahei Olah, what's going to happen to Torah? A person has to be involved completely with learning Torah. And the Gemara says over there that many people try to do that, and very few people are successful in that. So how is it to do that, to participate only in learning and not work for a living? So how is the same Rav Shimon ben Yochai himself coming and saying So actually, on the side of it here, Gilyan HaShach, Rabbi Akiva Eger, brings from the Shach that he had on Yerodea in Hilchos Talmud Torah, who because of this problem, he says, in fact, the Girsa over here shouldn't be Rav Shimon ben Yochai, it should be Rav Shimon ben Yochai Tzadok, who was one of Rav Yochanan's relatives. So in that case, there would be no contradiction. However, there are most other Achronim don't accept that. They say that he changed his mind. The Alter Rebbe, interestingly, has a long discussion about this in Kuntres Achron, in Hilchos Talmud Torah. Hilchos Talmud Torah of the Alter Rebbe is a lumdish sefer about lumdus. That's what it is. The Alter Rebbe takes apart every detail about that there is to know about learning Torah and analyzes it in great detail and comes to very interesting conclusions. So one of them is he discusses this. So one possibility he starts by saying maybe what we're talking about is there's a difference between when a person is starting out versus later when a person is starting out versus later on. So, okay, when a person is starting out, he can be Yotze with Shema Shachos Avos. But eventually, a person has to get to a level where he's learning on a more constant basis, because of an Aaron Brahma. However, then the Alter Rebbe says, it's hard to say that he's just saying generically over here, I feel like Tara Adam, and you're expected to understand that it means only at the beginning. So the Alter Rebbe ends up saying that another explanation of it is that here Rav Shimon ben Yochai is talking about a person who isn't capable of becoming a great Talmud Chacham. He doesn't have the head for it. So fine, let him be, if necessary. In other words, the point is, you can have a person who, you know, we can look at him objectively. We can see he's not going to be the next Rav Akiva Eger. He's not going to be the next Gorbachev. He's not going to be the next great. He's not going to be the next great Talmud Chacham or whatever. So therefore, you know, fine. If he only does Perek Echad Shachos or Perek Echad Avot, or even Kriyashma Shachos Avot, then okay, at least he's doing the minimum. Okay, as time goes on, he should be doing more, but at least, on the other hand, what he's talking about, what Rav Shimon ben Yochai is talking about in Brachos, Torah Masahei Olah, he's talking about somebody who has the capability of being a great Talmud Chacham. So in that case, why should he be satisfied with just working for a living and setting aside time to be a Tzitzim LaTorah to learn, when he has the capability of being the next great Talmud Chacham, then he should be. And that's what Rav Shimon ben Yochai is demanding of him.
Like children.
So that, that a person needs to do, what it takes for that. But I mean, to the extent possible, he should do it in such a way, realizing that he has the capability that Hashem gave him the head to be able to be the next great Talmid Chacham or whatever. Then he has to work hard on that. And he can't say, okay, I'll just do Perakach on Shabbos or Perakach on Abbas and be yoked without it. Of him, more is expected. And Reb Shimon Yochai is saying over there that such a person is not Hanag Ben Minag Zeraferet. You should be, if you're going to be plowing and planting and whatever, Torah Matahe Aleo. Throw yourself into learning.
Yes, you can see the Rambam, Rashi were tremendous on it. Coming, and both of them had
Actually, I don't know that we know that Rashi did. Everybody always says that Rashi was a wine grower, but there isn't really any solid evidence for that. The Rambam really had no choice. The Rambam originally was a career Talmid Chacham. Only his brother, who had the family fortune in his hand, drowned on a boat in the Indian Ocean, and therefore the Rambam was left with his own family to support and Reb David. So you have no choice. Fine, you have no choice. But the point is, in other words, and nevertheless, he still became the Rambam. He wasn't just satisfied with Perek Lechem Shachar to Perek Lechem.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
Affiliation.
Right. Okay, but that's it. Yeah.
Okay.
Continues the Gemara. Shaul ben Jama ben Achoyte for Rabbi Shmuel to Rabbi Shmuel. Ben Jama, who was the nephew of Rabbi Shmuel, one time asked Rabbi Shmuel. He says, "Kigoyin ani shalamati kolat Torah kola." Take me as an example. I've learned the entire Torah. Now, a person can't possibly learn the entire Torah, but in other words, that's what I've also discussed in Hilchos Kamatara. That means that he knew all the halachos that he had to know. Mahu lumet chochmas yivon. Am I allowed to take out time from my schedule to learn Chochmas Yevonis? Now, we actually learned earlier in the Sefer that there was a gzeira of the Chachamim on learning Chochmas Yevonis. So Tosfos asks, so what is Ben Jama thinking? And it can't be Tosfos says it was before this gzeira, because chronologically it doesn't work. So therefore, Tosfos says the difference is this Ben Jama was Kodesh L'Malchus. And the Gemara discusses in Bava Kamma that when you have a person who's Kodesh L'Malchus, you have a person who's close to the government, and therefore you have to know these things in order to be able to interact with them and be able to help his fellow Yidden, then he has a heter too. So now he's asking, do I have a heter for that?
What about the Bava Nail, who was also close to L'Malchus?
And Taka, he learned it. Yeah.
He learned this, and then he went to...
Okay, wait. Kara Olam HaMikra Zeh, Rabbi Shmuel answers him by quoting the following pasuk that we were saying before, Lo Yom of Sefer HaTorah HaZamitikah, this Sefer HaTorah should not leave your mouth, V'Hagifta B'Yom of HaLayla, you should be meditating about it day and night. So he says, Sey Uvdoik Shoshen and Lo Yom HaYom V'Lo Yom HaLayla. Go ahead and find a time that's not the day and not the night, Ulamah Yifah Chokmas Yivonis, and then you can learn Chokmas Yivonis in that. In other words, there's no such time, so therefore, no, you don't have a hat. So what is Tosfos answer? So what about the answer is because it wasn't so necessary for him. He was close to the Malchus, but it wasn't Rabbi Shmuel knew the situation and knew that Ben Gamma's situation is such that he doesn't need, there's not so much Tzorach Tzibur, Tosfos says, like there was Rabbi Gamliel and his family, we find there was Tzorach Tzibur. Rabbi Shmuel knew that with Ben Gamma there's not as much Tzorach Tzibur. He could be helpful being close to the Malchus, but not so much. It wasn't like he was in a position to accomplish so much that he should have a heter to learn Chokhmah Yevonis. Okay, so you're mentioning about the Bavanel, you could also mention about the Rambam, the Ramban, many others that learn Chokhmah Spetonius. But yeah, at the end of Perchet Tanya, the Alter Rebbe talks about it briefly, that if you're using it in order to earn a living, then you have a certain heter for it. If you're using it, other Mechorshim talk about, if you're using it, for example, you're in a situation where you need to deal with Minim and be able to argue against them, then you have a heter for that. Well, in Shulchan Aruch it also says that fine, you're a baklai ba'alma. Yeah, like as an occasional thing, a person can do it, but it's not meant to be any kind of steady diet.
So what,
says, about the Ramban, by the way, it says when did he learn these kinds of things? When he was in the bathroom.
So what do you explain Chokhmah?
So
specifically
Chokhmah Yevonis that we said the Chachamim after was some kind of sign language or something. We had the story before on Daf Samach Daled where this guy used this signal to the besiegers over there that as long as the Tmidim are being brought, you're never going to be able to conquer them. But then more generally here, so one explanation is also that we were talking Chokhmah Yevonis more generally. We're talking about the arts and the sciences and the philosophies and everything. Okay. With that said, of course, it points out in Shulchan Aruch and Alphabet carefully points out in Hilchos Kamatara, not, of course, if those philosophies are likely to weaken a person's Yiddish guy, then there's no heter for it at all.
Sure.
Amud. Pligged Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni. This that Rabbi Shmuel said that the only time you could learn Chokhmas Yevonis in principle would be a time that's not Yom and not Lila. In other words, you have no heter for it. that this whole discussion that we've been having this whole time, where we're assuming that la shtefa teras amiticha is a mitzvah, and therefore we're talking about what are the exact parameters of a mitzvah, all that disagrees with how Rav Shmuel ben Nachmeni understands the pasuk. The Amar Rav Shmuel ben Nachmeni Amar Rav Yechzkel, pasuk zeh eino loy chayva v'loy mitzvah ela bracha. This pasuk is not putting an obligation on a person. It's not even saying a mitzvah that this is the proper way to do it. What this pasuk is, it's a bracha that Hashem is giving to Yeshua. Namely, Hashem saw that words of Torah were very precious to Yeshua. Shenema, as we find in the Shorosi, Yeshua ben Nun Nile Yomish Mitzrayim, that Yeshua ben Nun never left Moshe's tent. He's constantly there to learn from Moshe. Amalei Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Yeshua. This is after Yeshua took over as leader from Moshe. Yeshua, Kokach, Chaviven Alecha Divrei Torah. The words of Torah are so precious to you. Then I give you a bracha le Yomish Teifa Torah Zavikicha. So in other words, according to that, it's not a mitzvah, it's not a chayva. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah we have elsewhere, but the Shinantam Lavanacha B'divarta Bam. But Rav Shmuel ben Nachmeni is saying that we're not learning any details about how you have to learn Torah from this pasuk. Because this pasuk is a bracha that Hashem has given to Yeshua.
But he didn't have any source. In other words, Yeshua, Hashem gives you a bracha.
No, in other words, now the fact that, I'm giving you a bracha because you love Torah so much, the bracha is that Shittaka never leave your mouth, that you should never forget it. Now that was a bracha. Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel, Divrei Torah lo yuhu alacha choyva. Words of Torah should not be an obligation on you. An obligation, meaning Rashi says, like a person who has an obligation, let me get rid of it, and I'll be pasur from it. The same way a person shouldn't say, okay, I have X amount to learn, I have Terek Echad to learn, and then I'm pasur, because you can't pasur yourself from Torah. That's Rashi explained. Tosfos gives two other explanations. Another one is lo yu alecha choyva, is that you shouldn't, it is unlike what we were saying about what Rav Shimon Yochai says in Bracha, you shouldn't consider that Torah is your only obligation, because the fact is you do have other obligations in life as well. On the other hand, you can't abandon Torah altogether. You have to have Talmud Torah in Derech Eretz. So according to that second explanation, lo yu alecha choyva means don't consider it your only obligation. Be aware that you've got other obligations as well. And do you have Talmud Torah in Derech Eretz? Again, it may be that you only have time for Perekach and Trachos or Perekach and Avot. And then a third explanation Tosfos says is don't think that you're obligated to learn the whole Torah. Like, don't think it's an all or nothing thing. If you can't learn the whole Torah, you may as well not bother. No, as it says in Tosfos, it's loy alacha malacha ligmer v'le'atha ben chorin le'bosu m'meh. The Iyasar Asher l'spir achmach ha'mehen, on the other hand, continues to be small, you don't have the right to pass it yourself from it. So again, either it means that you shouldn't consider... Hold on. Listen. According to Rashi's explanation, what it means is don't consider it like an obligation, like, okay, let me get rid of it and I'll be done with it. On the other hand, you can't say, well, I'm not obligated at all. According to Tosfos's two explanations, according to Tosfos's first explanation, it means that don't think that you have to learn Torah exclusively, but on the other hand, don't think you don't have to learn Torah at all. You have to find the middle ground. And according to the last explanation, don't think that it's a chayva, you have to learn the whole thing, but on the other hand, don't think, well, I also don't have to learn any of it. No, you have to learn whatever you can. On the Chizkiyah, more on the topic of learning Torah, Chizkiyah says, my dichtiv, what does it mean? A pasuk in Iyos that goes as follows. The simple meaning of the pasuk is a little bit complicated, and you have a few different explanations that the Mepharshim give over there. Basically, one explanation Rashi says over there, it means that Elihu is telling Iyov, after all the tzoras that he's undergone, you should know that Hashem has benefited you by pulling you away through these nisyonos that you've undergone, that you wanted to go through the narrow entrance of Gehenna. Like talking a person into something. But like Hashem, so to speak, like talk you into a situation where you're saved from the peace door, from the narrow entrance of Gehenna. So Gemara is going to douse in a little bit similarly, but in a little bit of a different vein. Not about Yisurim, but about Torah. Come see that Hashem's ways are not like the ways of people. This people, what does it mean of mesis? Usually means the person is trying to convince somebody to do something that's bad for them. Like the classic case of a mesis when it comes to Avodah Zarah, for example. So the usual word mesis means that you have a person who was going to do the right thing, and then you have somebody convinces him to do the wrong thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made this, is the Adam, Midak HaMisov, Midak HaChaim. Hashem is the other way around. Hashem has thought that. Hashem's incitement, Hashem's convincing a person is to go from, to move away from something that would bring him to death to bring him to something that will bring him life. Indeed, he has been mated. You, Hashem has persuaded you, has enticed, persuaded, whatever you. Me peep star from the narrow mouth. To go away from the narrow mouth, meaning Gehenim shapia star, meaning he's enticing you to learn Torah, and thus you'll stay away from Gehenim, which has a narrow mouth. Now, why does it have a narrow mouth? The smoke of Gehenim is collected within. In other words, if Gehenna had a wide mouth, so to speak, it would mean all the smoke in it dissipates very easily. It has a narrow mouth, so like all the smoke, all the sodas that a neshama undergoes in Gehenna remain within. The Shema Toymar, now you might think to yourself, okay, the mouth is narrow, Mestama, the whole thing is narrow, so in that case I've got nothing to worry about Gehenna anyway, but so to speak there's not enough room for everybody in it anyway. No, Talmud Leimer. Therefore, in the passage that we were quoting, it continues Rachav leMutzak Tachtecha, but which literally means a wideness where there's no narrowness underneath it. So the Gemara could have used that to say that it means also that it's wide below, but instead the Gemara brings a different passage from Yeshaya, a passage from Yeshaya that's also describing Gehenna metaphorically.
And it peaks up Gehenna.
Mepitzar means from the narrow opening of Gehenna.
In other words, you never leave
Gehenna. No, not you never leave. Of course, the Shama eventually leaves it. But the point is, like, the mouth of Gehenna is narrow, so to speak. So, like, all the smoke remains within. As opposed to dissipating. No, in other words, eventually, the Shama does what it needs to in there and then gets cleaned up and leaves it. But the point is, describing Gehenna as having a narrow mouth is a way of saying, in other words, that the suffering that's in there is intense. It doesn't dissipate easily. Anyway. The Shema Toma, Kishen Shapir Fak Akola Tala, so you might think, okay, well, if the opening of Gehenna is narrow, then the inside of it is probably also narrow. And therefore, in other words, I've got nothing to worry about. There's not that much smoke. There's not that much solace in there. No. Talmud Bama, therefore, we have a different passage in Yeshaya that also describes Gehenna and describes the Shemik Herfid. He made it deep and he made it wide. The Shema Kemal Melach Loihuchana. So you might say, okay, big deal, though at least Gehenna is not ready for a Melech. Now, what is a Melech? Rashi says a Talmud Chacham is called a Melech, Man Malchi Rabbanon. And so over here would mean if you have a person, you have a Talmud Chacham who abandons Torah, maybe he may figure to himself, I'm still safe from Gehenna, because after all, I did learn Torah in the past. No, Talmud Lomar, therefore that pasuk in Yeshaya continues, Gamhi Lamelach Kohan, even it was prepared for the king. So in other words, even a king, even a Talmud Chacham who abandoned Torah, is going to have his place in there. Marshal explains a little bit differently also. It means, Melach can mean in a simple sense. You have a king, a Rosha, like Achal, for example, where in the end, Mishkizdiyahu, his son, had to drag his body around on a bed of ropes in order to be Mechapa for him. So therefore, in other words, a king might think, I'm above the law, I don't have to worry about Gehenna. Now he needs to be aware that it's prepared for him as well. Yes. The Shema Toma Ein Ba'etim, you might think, okay, so Gehenna doesn't have any wood in it. In other words, fine, there may be smoke, but it's an insubstantial thing. No, Talmud Lomar, therefore, that same passage in Yeshaya continues, Midurasa Eish Ve'etim Harbe. The fire of it, Midurasa, the fire of it, Eish Ve'etim Harbe, there's a lot of fire, and the pyre of it, there's a lot of fire, and there's a lot of wood. So therefore, Eish Ve'etim, wood, fire and wood. Okay, so in other words, the point is, a person needs to realize what Gehenna really is, and therefore realize what a favor Hashem is doing for him by convincing him, by persuading him, or inciting him, or whatever, to learn Torah, rather than have to deal with that.
We all have to go to
Gehenna. One second. The Shema Torah, so you might say, okay, well that means, fine, okay, so a person learns Torah, his schar is a negative schar, that he doesn't have to go to Gehenna. There's not necessarily any positive schar. No, Talmud Lomar, therefore now returning to the passage from Iyov, that Elihu was telling Iyov, that passage that he quoted about Gehenna, finishes off, the Nachat Shochan Chamole Joshen, the pleasure of your table will be filled with fatness. In other words, that Hashem is saying that Hashem incites you, Hashem convinces you to learn Torah, and not just there's a negative thing that it saves you from Gehenna, but there's also a positive thing that you get a positive good out of it, that your table in Gan Eden is full of fatness and full of enjoyment.
That's in Gan Eden.
It depends where you have the occasional Talmud Chacham, as the Gemara says, but it's not common then. Okay. that's the idea, therefore. So that's the importance of learning Torah. It keeps the person out of Gehenna, and it gives them a fast and wonderful chelik lo lamo. The Mishnah continued. Chal yarech purim liyos b'Shabbos. We had the case in the Mishnah when Yom Kippur comes out on Shabbos, and then they have to distribute the lechem upon him that evening. And we had another case in the Mishnah where Yom Kippur falls out on Erev Shabbos, where then we said so the third of Yom Kippur is supposed to be eaten that evening, and the Bavliim we said would eat it wool. So who are these Bavliim? Amar Rabbi Babachana Amar Rabbi Yechonon. Like Bavliim him ela Alexandrian him. These people are not actually from Bavel; they're actually from Alexandria in Egypt. However, because they hated the Bavliim, therefore they called these people Bavliim. Now, who hates the Bavliim and why? Rashi says the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael don't like the Bavliim because they have because they have this minag rav tonus. They act like in this they act like in this gluttonous way, eating raw meat. So therefore, the Chachamim use the word Bavliim to them, even though they're actually from Alexandria, as a term of derision for them. Tosfos says differently is that the Yad Gemara in Yuma, where Rish Lakish, who was from Eretz Yisrael, says to Rabbi Lazar, who came from Bavel, that we Bnei Eretz Yisrael hate you Bavliim, we hold it against you, because if you Bavliim had come to Eretz Yisrael to build the second Beis Mikdash, there never again would have been a Golus. The fact that only 42,000 some Jews came from Babel to build the second Beis Mikdash, and the rest of them stayed behind in Babel, so therefore the Bnei Eretz Yisrael held that against the Bnei Babel, and therefore they used the term Bavliim as a term of opprobrium.
Which tribes came back to Eretz Yisrael?
Yeah, some various tribes. I mean, you had some of Yehuda, some of Binyamin, and some of each of the other Shvatim. Fine, but you still had
all the other Shvatim also?
Yes, you had members of the other Shvatim as well. They're not listed explicitly in the Sukkim, but Seder Olam explains that they were there. But so yeah, but the bottom line is you had only 42,000 people come back out of a Jewish people of how many million were there at the time, or how many hundred thousand, whatever. So the fact is there was a large fraction that stayed behind in Babel, and therefore Tosfos says on the basis of that Gemara and Yuma that therefore the Bnei Eretz Yisrael hated per se, you don't hate another Yid, but whatever, they didn't like the Bavliim, and therefore they use the term Bavliim for people that they didn't like, even though these particular people are from Alexandria.
1 second, the Aseres HaShvatim had people from Binyamin and Yehuda.
No, but the Yehuda and Binyamin had people from the Aseres HaShvatim all the way back from the time of Yerovam. Yehuda and Binyamin, the southern kingdom that had the Beis Hamikdash, you had already in the time of Yerovam, you had people from the other Shvatim came and joined them because they didn't want to deal with Yerovam and his Egre Azov and all that. They wanted to be able to come to the Beis Hamikdash. Later on, at different times...
Before they went to Babel.
Yeah, long before. This is a couple hundred years before Golus Babel. And then you had different other times, you had different members of the Aseres HaShvatim joined Yehuda and Binyamin. So yeah, there were substantial numbers of them. All right. Anyway,
they were in the Aseres HaShvatim also people from Yehuda?
No, maybe not. I don't know, but if there were very many. Okay, I don't know. I don't think we specifically find any.
So within Yehuda and
Benjamin? Within Yehuda and Benjamin, there were members from the other HaShvatim.
But not the other way.
Right. Doris HaShonim, which is a safer on Jewish history, has a whole different explanation of this Alexandrium and Bavliim thing and what we mean that they hated them. He explains, based on some passages in Josephus and other things, that what it is you have people from Babel who are very tough guys. They served in the Persian army and so forth. And some of them eventually moved to Alexandria. When we say over here, Shasonim Oitam, he says it doesn't mean the Bnei Eretz Yisrael hated the Bavliim. Why should they? It means the Alexandrian hated these Bavliim. The Alexandrian were stuck-up people. They tended to look down on people who weren't like them, so therefore they didn't like these Bavliim, and even though they're living there in Alexandria for generations, they still called them Bavliim because of where they were originally.
The Goyim, the Jews.
The Pashas means the Jews. If Alexandria looked down at the Bavliim, and therefore they continued to call them Bavliim, even though they're living for generations in Alexandria. Okay. Tanya Namihocha, you learn similarly in a Braithir, Rabbi Yosiyim, led Bavliim Hen and Alexandrian Hen. These people in our Mishnah are not Bavliim but Alexandrian. Again, according to Rashi, it means literally, they're actually from Alexandria, but they called them Bavliim as a term of derision. According to Doris HaShonim, what it means is they actually came from Alexandria, but their ancestors came from Babylon. Yeah. But because they hated the Bavliim, Korinos and Hashem Bavliim, then they called them by the name Bavliim. Again, according to Rashi and Tosfos, it means that the Bnei Eretz Yisrael, including the Chachamim, hated the Bavliim.
The Bavliim
meaning the people from Babel, meaning the Jews from Babel. And therefore, when they had people that they wanted to use a term of derision for them, they would call them Babylon, even if they're actually from Alexandria. May your mind be at ease because you set my mind at ease. Why is that? Rashi says Rabbi Yehuda's family came from Babel. So therefore, when Rabbi Yehuda saw our mission of Babli and the saying over there that Dice and Joppa, then he felt bad about it. So now when Rabbi Yossi explains that really these people are from Alexandria, he felt much better. Or according to Doris Hadashonim, the vote is, Rabbi Yehuda thought that was saying all the B'nai Ot Yisrael hate all the Babli and how I talk them. No, now we're saying it's not that the B'nai Ot Yisrael hate them at all. It's the B'nai Alexandria hate the Babli. Okay, that makes me feel much better that you don't have the B'nai Ot Yisrael don't have anything particular against the Babli anymore. Okay. Mishnah says, "Sidir halachem b'Shabbos v'et abizichin la'achar Shabbos." Suppose that they put the lachem upon him on the shulchan on Shabbos, and then they put the position there only on Sunday or some other time during the week. Normally, they're supposed to both be placed there on Shabbos. The hichdir at abizichin b'Shabbos, then they burnt the contents of the position on the next Shabbos. Possible, then that lachem upon him is possible because it hasn't been on the shulchan long enough. The lachem and the position have to be there for 7 full days. So therefore, it's possible. However, and because it's possible, ein chayav an aleh, mishum pigul, no yitzah v'tameh, if somebody were to eat that lachem upon him, and there was a problem of pigul, or no yitzah v'tameh, they wouldn't be chayav karet because it's possible, right? And then therefore, in other words, the Rashi says, the vort is, later in the Mishnah, we're going to talk about a case where you can leave it for the following Shabbat. But here the problem is, since you put the lachem upon him itself on the shulchan on Shabbat, then the shulchan is makadosh. And now it can only stay there until the next Sabbath. After that, it's possible by limit. Therefore, it's possible and you have no way around it. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Another case. See, there is a lechem that's a position to Shabbos. Suppose they put the lechem and the position on Shabbos like they were supposed to. But then, v'hikter es ha-bazichin la'achar Shabbos. Then they took the bazichin and offered the contents of them on the Mizrach after Shabbos. Right. So in other words, more than 7 days later. So they put it on, let's say, Shabbos Parshas Vayetzeh. Parshas Vayishlach came, they did not take off the position. They took them off Sunday, the day after, Sunday of Parshas Vayishlach. So then, Sulah, so again it's possible, and again, Ve'en Chayav and Aleim, from Pigul Noser V'Tomeh, and again you're not Chayav for Pigul Noser V'Tomeh, because again, they have to be burnt on the Mizbeach on Shabbos.
Even if they laid the Kavanah on the first Shabbos, that they would leave it...
There's no Kavanah, you have to have, you're supposed to take it off the following Shabbos, if you came also by Lina. Right. Therefore you have a problem. And a third case, Sidur et ha-lechem et ha-bazichin la'achar Shabbos. What about if they put the lechem and the bazichin both on the shulchan after Shabbos? Let's say they put them on Sunday. V'hikdur et ha-bazichin, instead of putting them on Shabbos, like they're supposed to, v'hikdur et ha-bazichin b'Shabbos, and then they offer the bazichin on the Mizbeach the following Shabbos. So they put them on Sunday of Parshas Vayishlach, and they were makhul the bazichin on Shabbos Parshas Vayishlach. Also, the day early. Well, again, it's only been there 6 days. They put it on a day late, and now it's only been on the shulchan 6 days. Ksula, then it's also possible. Kesad yasta, so what should you do? Yanichena l'shabbat habar. You should leave the lechem upon him on there until the following Shabbat. So in this case, leave it there until Parshas Vayeshev. No, you put a new bazichin with them. Because even if the lechem upon him remains on there over a week, it doesn't matter as long as it's there from one Shabbat to the next. It only becomes Kaddish when Shabbat comes. So therefore, when they put it on the shulchan on Sunday, it doesn't become Kaddish till the following Shabbat anyway. So therefore, they can leave it another week. Now, this that we're saying Sula, and then we're saying Kate said Yasa. So we talked a few days ago that Rashi, there's a sugya on this in Yuma, because what we're going to bring in the Gemara over here is, it comes from a Mishnah in Yuma, and the Gemara has a parallel sugya there in Yuma. There Rashi says we shouldn't be Gersh Sula, because in fact the lachem upon him is not possible. All it is as the Mishnah continues. Because exactly, all it is you need to put new position with them, and then you put new position with them the following Shabbos, and you leave it until the following Shabbos.
The bazichin can only be put on Shabbos.
Well, everything is only supposed to be put on Shabbos. Right. But like this, you put everything there on Sunday. Then what we're saying is, so no, you can't be mocked with it that following Shabbos. But so yeah, so Rashi says over there you shouldn't be girded solar. However, Tosfos discussed earlier in our Masechet on Daf Tzadik, we had a short sugya about this. And Tosfos said over there that maybe what it means is that if you were to be mocked with the bazichin on Shabbos, like possible, but. So Tosfos says there are two possibilities. Kate said Yasa, could mean what do you do in the first place once you have, you put the lechem on the bezichem there on Sunday, then you realize that's no good, you were supposed to put them on there on Shabbos. What do you do now in order to fix up the situation? Leave it on Sunday, leave it there an extra Shabbos, and don't do anything with it that Shabbos. Or the other possibility is, suppose that you offered the bezichem on Shabbos, which you weren't supposed to, what do you do with the lechem up on it now? The answer is put fresh bezichem with them and leave them for another Shabbos.
When do you offer the bezichem? Both
the bezichem are supposed to be offered on Shabbos. And the lechem aponim are then distributed on Shabbos. Right. So here we're talking about. So in other words, again, so you have two possibilities. Either what the Mishnah means is you put them both on Sunday. So either what the Mishnah means is that don't, in order to make sure it's kosher, don't do anything that immediate Shabbos, only the next Shabbos where you take off the position and take off the lechem aponim, and that way you'll be back to normal. In other words, according to that, it would mean if they were mastered the position that Shabbos, you would have a problem. Those lechem aponim would be kosher. The other way of looking at it is that, no, the lechem aponim will still remain kosher as long as you put new bezichim with them and leave them on the shulchan until the following Shabbos.
So what about it has to be there tamid without bezichim? It's not considered there.
You were marked with the bezichim on Shabbos. What are you supposed to do?
But for 1 week, there's nothing.
No, so there you put fresh bezichim. I just said you put new bezichim.
So you take the old...
You put them on there on Sunday, which you weren't supposed to do. You were supposed to put them there on Shabbos.
Right.
Instead, what you do is, for now, let's say, for example, according to Tosfos, the second explanation, you did take off the bezichim and were makir them on Shabbos. What you do is, the lechem aponim nevertheless remains kosher. Leave it on the shulchan, put new bezichim, and leave it there another week.
Leave the old one.
Yes. You leave the old lechem aponim with new bezichim. That's according to Tosfos, the second explanation. According to the first explanation, it would come out that, no, if they were makir the bezichim, the lechem aponim is taka kosher. The only thing you can do is leave everything there for 15 days instead of the normal 7. You just leave the position and the lechem aponim there and don't do anything with it the immediate Shabbos, only the following one.
So that's breaking the rule of tummy, isn't it?
No, because it's remaining on the shulchan. The position are there and the lechem aponim are there. Why not? No, because it wasn't placed there on Shabbos. Therefore, it's only going to get its kosher the following Shabbos. You're right. Okay, so it doesn't have its full kosher. Okay, nevertheless, it's still on the shulchan. It can't be helped otherwise. So?
It's still considered lechem aponim?
Yes. Yeah, once comes Shabbos. Yeah, that's what we'll talk about the chappas on the base. Okay. So, the Gemara starts off like this. Snan Hossam. We learn in the Mishnah and Yuma as follows. Almalah, it's the beginning of the third paragraph of Yuma. It's discussing over there the Avodah of Yom Kippur, but more generally, it's a lot of the things it's talking about over there apply during the year. Almalah hem ha-mumunah, tzur u'i negiyaz man shchita. The mumunah, the one in charge of the Kohenim, says to them, go and see if the time of shechting the Kohen Talmud has come yet. In Higiyah, if that time came, Haroya, the one who's looking out, who would stand on top of the wall and look for the light in the sky, Haroya Oma Barkai. He would say Barkai, Meloshim Barak, like there's a light in the sky. Matisya ben Shmuel, Oma Heyot Tnei Kol Mizrach. Matisya ben Shmuel says that the whole eastern side is lit. Ad Shebechevron, all the way until Chevron. One second. So who is this Matisya ben Shmuel? Rashi explains he was the one in charge of the piyasa. So Rashi learns that what we're saying is that that when the person said Barkai, he would say, that's not enough. Is it Heir Kol Pnei Mizrach Ad Shebechevron? Is it light all the way as far as Chevron? And the guy on top would answer, who are Mehen? And the person on top of the wall would answer Hain. Would answer yes. Another explanation is that Matisya ben Shmuel is actually a Tana who disagrees with the Tana Kama of the Mishnah. The Tana Kama would say it's enough that Barkai, you have a little bit of light, and he would say you have to have Heir Tnei Kol Mizrach. The Gemara mentions over there, by the way, why they mention Ad Shebechevron is to remind us of the host of the others who are buried in Chevron. Okay, anyway, the
meaning. We learned that they could see from the Azaras Chevron directly, no?
I don't know if they could see Chevron directly, but at least they could see that the light has reached as far as Chevron. Okay, continues the mission of Olama Hutzrufulakah. I mean, actually, the Gemara there in Yuma mentions a few different possibilities of how we parse the words in the Mishnah. Is it that he'd say, hey, one other possibility is, for example, that Matisya ben Shmuel would say that you say, hey, Tnekol Mizrach, and the person on the top of the wall would say, Ad Shebechevron, do you mean that it has to be as far as Chevron? And the one on bottom would say, hey, yes, that's what I mean. And the one on top would say, well, yes, or no, whatever, there's a few different ways. Anyway. Continues the mission of Lomo Hutzrufulakah. Now, why do they need all of that to go up onto the roof or onto the wall or whatever and see if it's actually light? Instead of they could just figure out what time it is. Because one time the moonlight came up early in the morning, towards the end of the month when the moon rises early in the morning. the Dimu Shehem Mitzvah, they thought that it was already light in the east. They thought the sun was, they mistook the moonlight for sunlight. In the day, sun doesn't matter, whatever, it doesn't matter. All we know is sometime at the end of the month. Could have been winter, could have been summer, whatever. One time, yeah, they thought that the east side was lit up, so they thought the sun had risen, shocked with the Talmud, so they shafted the Talmud, and then when they realized their mistake, like the Ula Beis HaSefer, then they had to take it out to be burnt, because it had been shafted at night, so it was possible. Then the Mishnah continues, V'hiridu Kohen Gadol Beis HaTevilah, then they brought the Kohen Gadol down to do his first tevilah of the day on Yom Kippur. The Gemara discusses over there in Yuma, doesn't mean that on that day, the Gemara says over there, doesn't mean that on that same day when this happened, they accidentally had the Kohen Gadol Tovah too early, because Yom Kippur is early in the month. The moon doesn't rise that time in the morning early in the month. It means that once they realized it's time for the Kohen Gadol to be shafted, because they did the Teir Kol Pnei Mizrach thing, then they would tell the Kohen Gadol, go ahead and then start your first tevilah of the day, because you have to tell you five times on Yom Kippur.
It was
this is on Yom Kippur, on Yom Kippur morning. Okay. And the Mishnah continues, they had the following rule in the Mishnah, any Kohen Gadol who had to go to the bathroom for Gdolim, to excrete, Tone Tevila, he would have to Tovel before he comes back into the Azara to do any Avodah, the Kolam Masu Mayim, and if he urinates, Tone Kiddush Adayim Raglayim, then he has to give the Kaddish his hands and feet before he does any Avodah. The Gemara there with Yom Kippur is exactly why, anyway, that's not negated over here. The point is that we mentioned in the Mishnah that this one time when they mistook the moonlight for the sunlight and they shafted the Talmud, we said they had to go and burn it afterward, they had to go and burn it in the Beit HaSefer because it was possible. So that's what's going to come into our Gemara over here. Tony Avur Zerabavin, so the father of Avin Torah Braisa, Loi Zubavad, not only that example of a Talmud that was shafted at night has to be burnt, El Afil Ola Sa'oif, Shinimlik of Alayla, even if an Ola Sa'oif, if the Malika was done at night, same kind of thing, they did the same kind of mistake. Or Mincha Shinikmasal of Alayla, or a Mincha where the Komis was taken at night, also takes the Beit HaSefer. Also, they have to be taken out and burnt. So the question is, Vishlema Ola Sa'if. I can understand why if an Ola Sa'if was done at night, then they have to go and burn it. They have to dispose of it. Mishum Bale Afshalah Adurah. So once it's dead, you can't bring it back alive again. El Mincha. But when it comes to a Mincha, why should we say if the Kmitza was done at night, it's completely possible and there's no undoing it? Afshur de Mahadra Komitz Ladukse, the Komitz the Imamah. Why can't you put the Komitz back in to the Keli where the rest of the Mincha is, and then you'll take the Kmitza properly by day?
We had that.
No, we didn't. We didn't talk about where it was done by night. No. We talked about where it was placed in a Kli Shari, sure, but here on the face of it, even if it was placed in a Kli Shari, it was done at night. So at night, what's the problem? And it wasn't a Kaddish again.
If you took it, you could replace it in a Kli Shari during the day.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Then it wouldn't be any problem.
No. If you took it and put it in a Kli Shari during the day, you couldn't return it into the Mincha. But here we're talking about it was done at night. So why are we saying that it has to be Yosef Beis HaSefer? Why can't we say that because it was at night, it didn't become Kaddish in the second Kli Shalos, therefore you can put it back into the first one, and, yeah. And the answer is, Hu Tani Lo Behu Amala, so Rav Avin is the father of Rav Avin, rather, is the one who taught this Braisa, he's also the one who answered it, that the answer is, Kli Shalos Mekadshin Shalos Bizmanam. Kli Shalos are able to be Mekadish things even when it's the wrong time for those things. So even though we're talking over here about a mincha, which has to be done by day, and here it was done by night, nevertheless, the Kli Shoris that you put the Kohenus into is enough to be the kind of shit, even though it was at night, and therefore it can't be put back in with the rest of the mincha. So now, so eventually we'll get how that relates to our mission. No. Well, that's the point. Well, therefore, but it's possible because the Kohenus was done at night. Therefore, there's no undoing it.
Okay.
Yes. But eventually we're going to get back to our Mishnah. We're going to see how this relates to our Mishnah. But first, Maitzvi, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction from a Braisa that says, Kol HaKorev Vayoyim Kodesh Vayoyim, anything that's meant to be offered during the day, Korbanos in general, can be Kodesh only by day, only if you put in a Fisharis by day, does it get Kodesh as I go.
Including Mincha?
Yeah, because Mincha is only brought by day. Balayla Kodesh Balayla, something that is supposed to become Kodesh by night, can become Kaddish by night. Now, what kind of Korbanos can be brought by night? So Rashi in front of us says Minchas Nesachim. So Minchas Nesachim can be brought at night. If you brought the Korban during the day, you can bring the Minchas Nesachim that night. We learned that earlier. Shittim Kubetis adds to Rashi, and Tosfos also has this Girsa in Rashi, that another example would be Hatovas HaNeir, the lighting of the menorah, which takes place at night. However, Tosfos has a problem with that because you can't really call that kore. Kore implies something that's offered on a mizbeach, not the oil that goes into the menorah. Okay, whatever it is, anyway. So therefore, Tosfos would say it would have to be minchas nesachim. So something that's meant to be kodesh balayla, kodesh balayla, can become kodesh when you put it in a tzicharis by night. Bein by yom or bein balayla, when you have something that can be offered by day or by night, kodesh, bein by yom or bein balayla. Well, an example again would be minchas nesachim, which can be offered by day or by night. Another example would be the emurim of a korban.
Ben
by yom, ben by yom. Those can be offered by day or by night. But they're lame. Okay. So the point is, so the point is, kodesh by yom, kodesh by yom. So we're saying anything that's offered by day can become kodesh, and a klishar is only by day, meaning by yom, ein, by laila, loy. So only by day, not by night. So over here, why would this mincha, again, why would the koimus of this mincha become kodesh if you put in a klishar at night, when a mincha is only meant to be offered during the day? And you can't say it's a minchas nesachim, because a minchas nesachim you don't take chametz from.
Because the keli is kodesh?
No. What?
The keli can be kodesh by night.
That's the father of Rav Oven was saying this, that the keli can be mekadesh by night. But based on this braita, it seems that not. It seems that a mincha is only brought by day, therefore it can be mekadesh and a klishar is only by day. The answer is, eine kodesh likrav ava kodesh likosol. The answer is, when we say that the klishar is can be mekadesh at night, it means it's not mekadesh in the sense that it can be offered on the mizbeach, but it's mekadesh enough to become possible, that it'll become possible by lina, or tevul yom touching it, and so forth. So therefore, in other words, again, this mincha, where the kermes was taken at night and placed into a klisharis, the klisharis that it was put into, even though it was at night, is mekadesh to the extent where now it can't be returned into the mincha itself, that now it has the status of a kermes, but not enough to be makadesh on the mizbeach. Therefore, the mincha is possible, and the only thing you can do is take it out and burn it. Now comes our Mishnah, Moisiv Rav Zera. So Rav Zera says, in that case, I have a contradiction from our Mishnah. We said in the Mishnah, Sidur et ha-lechem et ha-bazichin acha Shabbos. If you put the lechem upon him and the bazichin on the shulchan on Sunday, or any time during the week, the hikdur et ha-bazichin v'shabbos, and then you offer the bazichin on the following Shabbos, Sola, then we said it's possible. Kesad yasa, so what should you do? Yanichen el Shabbos haba, leave the lechem upon him on the shulchan until the next Shabbos. Because even if it remains on the shulchan extra days, it doesn't matter. The question is, if you're going to tell me that play shoras are able to be mekadesh things when you put them in them in the wrong time, listol or listosh for listol, it should become kodesh, and then it should become possible by lina. In other words, because the shulchan is a klei shoras, if you put the lachem upon him on them on Sunday and the bezichin, yes, the Shulchan is not supposed to be mekadesh them until Shabbos, but it should be the equivalent of putting a kodesh of a mincha in a klei shoras by night, where it's not mekadesh to be offered, but it makes it possible. So here it should be the same thing. The lachem upon him should become possible as soon as the next Shabbos passes, because lina, and we're saying that no.
That's the question that was asked.
Okay. Omer Rabba, Manda Komosiv, Shaka Komosiv. So Rabba says, okay, you know what? Rav Zera, who's asking the question, he has a very good point. It is a good question. On the other hand, the fact is, Avur Rav Ovin Nami Masnif Sekamar. The fact is, Avur Rav Ovin also was quoting a Braita. It wasn't like it was his own idea that we could then slog him up from our Mishnah. So we have to have some way of reconciling the Mishnah and the Braita. What it is, Kosovra Laila Ein Machotas Man. What it is, the Tana of Rav Ovin's Braita hold that Laila Ein Mechutzes Man. Meaning, in other words, that if you have the fact that it's the night before is not considered Mechutzes Man. Mechutzes Man, you have, it comes up in a lot of cases in connection with korban. For example, you have the idea that a korban can only be brought when it's at least 8 days old. You have a number of other cases. What we're saying is, we've had this concept before, but what it means is that the night before, in principle, already belongs to the next day. Therefore, with kodshim, usually we say halayla ho'lachak ayun, but on the other hand, the fact is that the night before already, in a certain sense, belongs to the following day. However, you can't bring karbonis there because you're barred by the fact that you can't bring karbonis at night. However, it already can be considered part of the next day. Therefore, when you put the mincha in the klisharis, when you put the kremis, rather, in the klisharis, the night before, it can be considered as though it's already the following day, to the extent that it will make it possible. To the extent that only Mechadish it and make it possible. On the other hand, with the Lachan HaFonim, we're saying you put it on Sunday. There's no way that Sunday can be considered part of the following Shabbos.
Sunday day.
Sunday day, yeah, can be considered part of the following Shabbos, which is 6 days later. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it is mechusar zman. Therefore, it's not going to be mechadish it until the following Friday night or the following Shabbos.
What about when the night comes?
What do you mean when the night comes? Well,
even though you put it in the day, but eventually the same day, the night is going to come Sunday night.
Well, no. Why would it be any more possible Sunday night? It's not considered on the Shulchan yet. It's not on the Shulchan because the Shulchan's not mechadish until Shabbos. So that's the question. Well, so the question is actually, but the better question you should ask is, what about Friday night? So that's the question. You're telling me that when it comes that day, it is going to be mechusas. You're telling me that previous days are mechusas man. So fine. Even let's say you put it on the Shulchan on Friday. Fine. Friday day is not part of Shabbos. However, but eventually, if you put it on earlier in the week, when Friday night comes, Beis Shimshi, by the way, literally means Bein HaShmashes, but Rashi explains elsewhere that they use that as a common term, meaning Friday, because in other days of the week, it doesn't really matter what a Bein HaShmashes. Friday night, it's very important to know what Bein HaShmashes. So it means when Friday night comes, Lichdish V'Lichdil. At that point, by your logic, it should become Kodesh, because already it's the night before. It's the night before Shabbos day, and therefore, at that point, it should become Kodesh, and then it should become Pasul that night. Then it should become possible that night, or actually, so you have different yesoys over here, whether it's that Friday night or the following Friday night or whatever, it'll become possible by Lina. So you might have a problem. Why is the Mishnah telling us you can leave it there without a problem? The Rava answers, the answer is, we would have to say that what you did is, before Bein HaShmashes, so the first Shabbat, you took it off. So let's say, in other words, the scenario of our Mishnah would be like this. They put it on Sunday of Parashas Vayishlach, today, let's say. Then they realize their mistake. So what they do is, sometime on Friday of Parashas Vayishlach, sometime this coming Friday, they'll take it off the Shulchan. That way it won't be on the Shulchan such that when it comes Friday night, it'll become Kaddish and Kossel by Lina. Shabbos morning, they'll put it there. And good, Shabbos morning, they put it there, and then it stays there until Shabbos Parashas Vayishlach, and then they're good.
Leaving it there during the night
for the first Shabbos would be a problem.
Right.
Yeah. Rav Ashi says you don't even need that. Even if you didn't take it off before the first Friday night, the answer is given the Sidra Shaloi Kamitzvasai because it was put on the Shulchan not in its proper time when it was Mechusas Man, put it on Sunday or Monday or whatever, earlier in the Shabbos, not the Kanisha Sidra HaKoyf. It's the equivalent of as if a monkey had put it on there. A monkey is the Gemara standard way of saying that when it was done by a non-human action. In other words, therefore, the Shulchan is not having the Kaddish it, even when it comes Friday night. When it comes to putting the Koyin that's in the Klishare, an act of a Koyin put it there, and he did put it there the night before, and Lila in Mechusa's man, and therefore the night before already belongs to the following day, therefore it becomes possible. But over here, since you put it on many days before, and many days before is Mechusa's man, so even when it comes Friday night, it's considered as though it was put there by a monkey or a robot or whatever, and therefore it won't become possible from having him left there on Friday night. And in fact, on the face of it, that should mean still that the Kohenim have to put it there Shabbos morning, because after all, it has to have been placed there by the Kohenim, not by a monkey. On the other hand, the Rambam doesn't mention that detail, which leads that Kohenim to say that when we say Kamisha Sidra Akoyf, what it means is, in other words, that when it was originally put there on Sunday, it's Kamisha Sidra Akoyf, and fine, it doesn't have to, the fact is, it was there on Shabbos morning, which is when the Shulchan is Mekadosh it, and therefore that's good enough for our purposes. We're not worried about
you put it on Sunday.
That's fine. The fact that they did it 5 days in advance is Kamisha Sidra Akoyf. It means when it comes Friday night, it's considered as though it was automatically there. However, we don't care that it's automatically there. The fact is, Shabbos morning comes and it is there. Therefore, we're good, and therefore it can remain there until the following Shabbos, and it won't become possible. Okay. Mishnah says, Shtei alechem necholot ein pochas mishnayim. So that's alechem. Yeah. Okay. The Mishnah says, Shtei alechem necholot ein pochas mishnayim v'lo yoyser ha-shloisha. The shtei alechem are never eaten less than 2 days from when they're made, and never more than 3. Case that, what does that mean? Nefes me'erev yomtiv, they're based on erev yomtiv, on erev shavuot. Necholos b'yomtiv, and they're eaten on the first day, on the one day of shavuot, there's only one day in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, the shnayim, that's the second day, they're made, let's say shavuot was on a Wednesday, so they're made on Tuesday, and they're eaten on Wednesday. How yomtiv liyas achar Shabbos, suppose that the one day of shavuot comes out on Sunday, you can't base them on Shabbos. They were based on Friday, therefore necholos b'shloisha, therefore they're eaten on the third day, Friday, Shabbos, Sabbath. Lachem aponim nechol and tochus metisha v'lo yosal achad ofer. The lachem aponim are eaten at least on the ninth day from when they're made, and at the most the 11th day. Case that, what does that mean? Nechol the erev Shabbos, the nechol the Shabbos letisha. The typical case is they're made on erev Shabbos, they're based on erev Shabbos, they're eaten the following Shabbos, which is the ninth day from when they're made. So if they're made, or you know, they were made, let's say this past erev Shabbos, which was Chet Kislev, they're going to be eaten the following Shabbos, which is Zayin Kislev.
By day,
yes. So therefore, you have Chet, Chet, Yod, Aleph, Yod, Yod, Gimel, Yod, Aleph, Yod, Aleph, Zayin. That's 9 days. How Yom Tov is erev Shabbos? Suppose that Yom Tov comes out on erev Shabbos, and you can't bake olav, and you can't bake the lachem aponim on Yom Tov. Therefore, nechol asoros. You have to add an extra day. You have to bake them on Thursday on erev Yom Tov. Shnei Yomim Tovim Shodosh. If erev Yom Tov came out on Friday, what about Shnei Yomim Tovim Shodosh Hashanah? What about if the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah? And Rashi points out that 2 days of Rashi points out that only when it comes to the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah do you have those are the only, that's the only 2 day Yom Tov that you can have in your Shalayim. Because all the other ones are only 1 day, right? That's the point. So therefore, so if you have the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, Thursday and Friday, nechol achad also, then after have been baked on Wednesday, therefore you're going from Wednesday of 1 week until Shabbos of the following week, and you have a total of 11 days. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, Monday. Yeah, counting inclusively the day that was made. Now Rashi asks the question, if Rosh Hashanah is Thursday and Friday, that means Yom Kippur is going to be on Shabbos. We learned before, two Mishnayos ago, that in that case, Lacham Aponim is eaten on Malka Shabbos. So in that case, that would be the 12th day. The answer is, when it comes to Kodshim, Halayla, Holach, Achra, Yom, the night is considered to be after the day, therefore, Mosi Yom Kippur, Malka Shabbos, will still be considered the 11th day. Will still be considered the 11th day relative to this, right?
And if Rosh Hashanah starts on Thursday,
and Yom Kippur is
on Shabbos.
Yes. Tosfos says, actually, it's not necessarily like that, because this that we have nowadays, when we have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, it's the first and second of Tishrei, in those days, it wasn't necessarily. In those days, when they had 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, the reason was that Adam hadn't shown up on the first day, and therefore they need to keep that day Kodesh and the next day Kodesh. Those days, really, are the 30th of Elul and the first of Tishrei. So therefore, in that case, if the first of Tishrei is Friday, no problem. The ninth of Tishrei is Shabbos, not the 10th. So therefore they eat it. They eat it that Shabbos, like any usual. Rashi assumed that it was the first and second of Tishrei, like we have it nowadays. So it's saying it's not necessarily like that.
But it can happen.
No, so according to Tosfos, the point is that when they had 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, it meant it was the 30th and the first, right? Okay, then therefore, it would still be the 11th day, right? The Eid of Deucha, Loyas HaShabbos, Loyas Yom Tov, the baking of the Lachem Aponim, and of the Shtei Lachem is not Deucha Shabbos or Yom Tov. Rav Shimon Gamliel and Rav Shimon Ben Asyan, Deucha Yom Tov, the Eid of Deucha Yom Tov. It is Deucha Yom Tov, he says, for reasons that the Gemara discusses in Beta, because it is eaten by the Kohenim, so therefore it can be considered Ochel Nefesh. The Eid of Deucha Yom Tov, but it's not Deucha Yom Kippur. If Yom Kippur falls out on Erev Shabbos, he would agree you don't bake the Lachem Aponim on it, because you can't eat on it. Yom Tov means Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says, Omer Ravina, L'divrei ha'omer n'dorim n'dorvus ain't craving the Yom. So according to the opinion, which is the Machlokas in Beta, that you're not allowed to offer n'dorim n'dorvus, a voluntary korbanos on Yom Tov, which is in fact Doraisa, which is in fact the halacha. Loi came in Doraisa mechachozu. You shouldn't think that on Doraisa level you would be allowed to do it, but Abonin who did Gozu Shaloi Yasheh, but maybe we would say that Abonin made a data, don't do that, because then you may delay bringing your korbanos until the next Yom Tov, and then you may end up being over on Baal Tachar. Don't think that Elamidaraisa Nami Lechozu. On a Doraisa level, according to that opinion, you're not allowed to bring the Dorim and the Doris on Yom Tov. And we know that, because after all, the Shtei Lechem has to be brought on that very day of Shavuos. The Lechem is Hashem Yasha, and there's no possibility that you might delay them, because they have to be brought on that day of Shavuos. But Katani, in a Doraisa, it's a Shabbos, it's Yom Tov, and nevertheless, were still saying that that baking them is not Derech HaYomtiv. So according to that opinion, that you can't bring the Dorim or the Javas on Yomtiv, that is not considered Sorcha Ochel Nefesh, and the Gemara discusses over there, because it's not regular food, it's coming from the Mizbeach, Mishrochon Gavaya Kazachu, and therefore it can't really be considered Ochel Nefesh for a head yet. Therefore, we see from our Mishnah that according to that opinion, the same thing would apply to the Lachem HaFanim as well, that they can't be baked on Yomtiv, as opposed to, according to the Pshim Gamil. In our Mishnah, he would say that you can bake them on Yomtiv because it's considered Sorcha. He would say that you could also bring Jordan and Java San Yamta for the same reason. All right. I don't know what's going on.